All right, folks, welcome to According to Sam. This is episode 197. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. I hope you had a great weekend. It's Holy Week, so I hope you have a great week leading up to the Easter holiday. I'm going to wrap up Ukraine in this podcast, and we hopefully I'm going to wrap it up. I'm going to kind of put a nice little bow on everything that we've been talking about in the past few weeks, just recap, you know, how we got into Ukraine. I'm going to, if I have time at the end, tell you what I think all of this is about more broadly, and we'll see how it goes. I have a lot to share with you. Let's get right into today's podcast. I want to start, I don't want to spend very much time on this, but I want to start, if you remember the podcast I did last week, remember the controversy, the bloodbath controversy of Donald Trump predicting an economic bloodbath, the media running with it. And I was explaining how this is something that has occurred time and time again since Donald Trump announced that he was running for president as a Republican in 2015. They have taken words out of context, phrases out of context, just made things up out of the blue to demonize this guy. And I told you at the end of doing that segment, I was like, you know, there's over a million Americans who believe that Donald Trump said to drink bleach or inject bleach in 2020 during the COVID crisis. And I have another Joe Biden promo here to share with you that he put out just the other day, where he claims that Donald Trump says to inject bleach, which is an absolute lie. And in Joe Biden's entire campaign is built on lies, lies over and over again. This guy is such a liar. He had to drop out of the 1988 presidential election when he was running in 1988 because of all of his lies. This guy is such a liar. I mean, he says that he cut the national deficit by $1 trillion. It's a lie. He said last week in this interview he did with Jonathan Capehart that black wealth is up 60% under his administration. A lie. Here, take a look at this clip, and I'm going to find the clip from he having to drop out of the 1988 election because of his lies.
I want to make those $800 ACA savings permanent. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is about the past and serving himself. This is the guy who doesn't care about science and reason. Remember, during the pandemic, Donald Trump told us to inject ourselves with bleach. He said there's nothing to worry about if you do that. Now Trump keeps
saying, he said there's nothing to worry about if you do that. That's what he said. He said inject yourself with bleach and there's nothing to worry about if you do that. Now, Donald Trump never said that. Donald Trump never said to inject yourself with bleach. Donald Trump asked the question, is there some type of disinfectant? Because the coronavirus is an infection. So he asked, is there some type of disinfection that we could use internally? And there is actually a light system that is a disinfectant that can be used. But he said, he asked the question, is there some type of disinfectant? They took the word disinfectant and turned it into bleach. And Joe Biden just flat out lies here and says that Donald Trump says to inject yourself with bleach and there's nothing wrong.
Doesn't care about science and reason. Remember, during the pandemic, Donald Trump told us to inject ourselves with bleach. He said there's nothing to worry about if you do that. Now Trump keeps telling us he's going to terminate the ACA. Think about what that means.
That he said to inject yourself with bleach, there's nothing to worry about if you do that. Now, this is from the 1988 election that he had to jump drop out of because of his lies. This guy's entire campaign is built on lies.
What law school did you attend, and where did you place in that class? And the other question is, could you quickly... I think I probably have
a much higher IQ than you do, I suspect. I went to law school on a full academic scholarship.
Lie?
The only one in my class to
That's
have a
lie.
Full academic scholarship. In the first year in law school, I decided I didn't want to be in law school and ended up in the bottom two-thirds of my class, and then decided I wanted to stay, went back to law school, and in fact ended up in the top half of my class.
Lie.
I won the international moot court competition. I was the outstanding student in the political science department at the end of my year. I graduated with 3 degrees from undergraduate school and 165 credits, only needed 123 credits, and I'd be delighted to sit down and compare my IQ to yours if you'd
Senator,
like, Frank.
If I could say one thing, I think just in my own opinion, I'm not questioning your IQ at all. I'm just saying that with the people that we have elected to office in recent years, I think that we have to question their credentials very solidly.
Well, I think you're right, Frank.
So all those,
but
all,
you know what I find?
All those are lies.
It seems to me if you can speak, you're at a liability in the Democratic Party.
Former Vice President Joe Biden is expected to officially jump into the 2020 race for president on Thursday. This will be his first candidacy.
After conceding just last weekend that no one knows me, Senator Joseph Biden of Delaware today became the fifth Democrat to declare he's seeking the party's presidential nomination. Lim Tucker has our report.
In 1988, the clarion call for my generation is not, it is our turn.
Where's
rather,
the...
It is our moment of obligation.
I can't find that, the clip where they break down all of the lies that Joe Biden was telling in that election. He actually plagiarizes a speech from a European politician that was part of the reason he had to drop out, and then the flat out lies. And the guy hasn't changed. The Joe Biden today that is running for re-election today, that Joe Biden that is president of the United States today, that has a 38-40% approval rating, that guy is the exact same Joe Biden that there's always been. And his voting record, his ability to tell flat out lies just unfazed by telling just flat out lies, and it just rolls off of him, because he knows the media is not going to call him on it. This Joe Biden is the exact same Joe Biden that has been in Congress, been in Washington for over 40 years. And he just continues to tell lies. So I just thought that was interesting. I wanted to show you that. Because, of course, millions of Americans believe that Donald Trump says to inject bleach. You have the president of the United States telling that lie. The media tells it over and over again. Donald Trump never said to inject bleach. He never used the word bleach. He said disinfectant. And he didn't say inject it. He was asking the question, is there some form of disinfectant that we can use? Is there anything other than a vaccine that we can use to fight this coronavirus? Can we use hydroxychloroquine? Can we use ivermectin? The answer was no. The only thing we have is vaccines. That was the real problem with Donald Trump's question about disinfectant. All right. So let's get back into Ukraine. Recap here. The war in Ukraine started in November of 2013, and it started with a protest at Independence Square there in the capital of Ukraine, in Kiev. The protesters first started to gather in the square because a trade deal that was being negotiated by the then president of Ukraine, Viktor Yanukovych, and the EU had broken down. This is a clip about the trade deal ending and the people starting to show up at Maidan, at Independence Square, to protest. And then you have, as that's going on, you have John McCain and Christopher Murphy two senators, one Democrat, one Republican, going over to Ukraine, encouraging these people and telling these people that we have your back.
The European Union cut off trade talks with Ukraine today, saying the former Soviet republic's terms have, quote, no grounds in reality. That development fired up protests.
It was a terrible deal. It was a terrible deal. Listen, that's a quote from the Yanukovych government. I mean, he's attempting to negotiate with them, but they're offering him a deal that is not good for the Ukrainian people. And I guess that the people who protested just wanted him to accept any deal just so we have connection to the EU. That this connection to the EU is the first step to us being accepted into EU and into NATO. So even if it was a crappy deal, these people who showed up to Maidan, they wanted Yanukovych to take it. That's how much they wanted to be connected to the EU. And the EU was offering them a crappy deal. And that's why Yanukovych backed out of the deal. Didn't have anything to do with Russia. It did have to do with Russia because Putin told them that if you accept this deal, then we're closing our borders visitors, but for goods. We're closing our borders. You won't be able to ship goods into our country, which makes all the sense in the world. Why would, if you're doing a trade deal with the EU, why would Russia allow their border to be open for European goods to flood Russia as well? So all of this was being considered by Yanukovych, and Yanukovych says that the deal that the EU was offering it wasn't worth it for me to shut our borders with Russia.
Grounds in reality. That terms have, quote, no grounds in reality. That development fired up protesters in the capital city of Kiev, who were joined this afternoon by Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona and Democrat Chris Murphy of Connecticut. They told the crowd of more than 200,000 that Americans support their resistance. Protesters want...
So Americans support their resistance. In 2014... Americans didn't even know anything about this resistance. What are you talking about, McCain, that Americans support this resistance? I didn't support this resistance. Did you support this resistance in 2014? No. But what is McCain and Chris Murphy over there talking about that Americans support this resistance? It's an absolute lie. You know who supports this resistance? Is the American Uniparty. The deep state, they're the ones who supported this resistance.
Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona and Democrat Chris Murphy of Connecticut. They told the crowd of more than 200,000 that Americans support their resistance. Protesters want closer ties to Europe.
So they wanted closer ties to Europe, and it didn't matter if it was a crappy deal or what, that they wanted Yanukovych to accept it so they can have closer ties to Europe, so they can be eventually accepted into the EU, so they could be eventually accepted into NATO. And this clown and Chris Murphy were over there saying that Americans support your resistance, this protest. I did not support the protest. Most Americans didn't even know anything about this, but these people supported the protest because they knew where the protest was getting ready to lead. They set the entire thing up. Now, on this trip, Chris Murphy and John McCain, they state that they want no violence from Yanukovych. Do not act in violence against these protesters, or we're prepared to sanction you. Now, where they got the right to tell Yanukovych how to deal with a protest in his country or tell Ukraine what to do with their protesters, I don't know where they thought they got that right, but that's what they did. And Yanukovych, he didn't act in violence. He didn't do anything to clear the square or to send the protesters home. He let them demonstrate as long as they were demonstrating peacefully. But in February, somebody started shooting at both the Yanukovych side and the protesters, which the protesters also included a small minority of very violent and well-armed Nazis. And then when that morning on February 20th, when someone started firing at both sides, the Yanukovych side and the side of the protesters, the Nazis, and the Yanukovych government started firing at each other. And then that set off the violence that happened on February 20th and the 21st, which forced Yanukovych to leave. Now, Yanukovych, before this happened on February 20th, he had already been negotiating with France and with Germany. And Germany at this time was the number one customer of Vladimir Putin and buying natural gas. So they had a business relationship, and the gas that was coming into Germany was also being distributed out to other European countries. So there was a business incentive for Europe to work out a peaceful settlement in Ukraine. That is why Victoria Nuland in the leaked phone call says F the EU, because she didn't, they don't care about your economic incentive to work out a peaceful settlement, Europe. We want this war to happen. That's why Joe Biden blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. They wanted to sever this economic relationship that Putin had with Europe, so that would sever the incentive for Europe to try to work out a peaceful settlement. But in February of 2014, Germany and France were trying to negotiate a peaceful settlement before the violence started in Maidan. And Yanukovych had agreed to do early elections, which he was sure to lose. And that would have settled the whole thing. And he would have, you know, left. They would have done new elections and someone else would have been elected. But I guess the United States didn't want that to happen. That's why I believe, and many people believe, that people who were contracted by the CIA were the ones who started the shooting on the morning of February 20th, which started the violence, which made it a violent coup. Instead of having an early election where people vote Yanukovych out, they got Yanukovych out with a violent coup, and this was the violence. A little bit of the violence that happened on February 20th, 21st, and by the 23rd, Yanukovych was gone. This is February 2014. So the violence did start. Yanukovych left. And if you remember, we started off this series of podcasts talking about George Soros. We talked about, we've watched a lot of this interview that George Soros did with the current number two in Canada. This is Justin Trudeau's deputy prime minister, and her name is Christina Freeland, and she's doing an interview with George Soros. We watched a lot of this where George Soros says this.
Well, yes, because basically, in many ways, I set up the foundation in Ukraine in 1990.
So George Soros admits that he set up the Civil Society Foundation in 1990. So he had been there organizing, since the wall came down in Berlin. The wall came down in 1989, 1990 is when he set up his foundation. 1990 is also the meeting in Helsinki, I believe it's in Finland, where George H.W. Bush tells Gorbachev that if you allow Germany into NATO, that we won't move any further east, which was a lie. So 1990 is when he sets up this foundation. 1990 is when that meeting happens. The wall comes down in 89. So George Soros had been there in Ukraine organizing people, funding scholarships, getting everything ready, where he could call people to protest the way he did in 2014. That was all because of civil society. After the coup, Nazis began to take over not only the government, the interim government were Nazis, but Nazi ground forces, the Azov Battalion, C-14, Right Sector, all these different Nazi groups, they start to spread out of Kiev and they start to head down into these areas that are in the southern eastern part of Ukraine, which are highly populated by Russian-speaking Ukrainians, Odessa, Crimea, Mariupol, which we looked at on Friday, the Donbas region. So these Nazi groups start to spread out into these areas so they can demand compliance from these people and, you know, demand and bring them under heel so they will accept what is going on in Kiev. Now, the American government, they refuse, because of John Conyers, he was leading the way. There was another congressman who was working with him from Florida. I forget his name, but they worked together. John Conyers, a Democrat, and this congressman from Florida was a Republican, and they worked together to block funding in 2015 from going to these Nazi groups, to the Azov Battalion and these other Nazi groups. So the Obama administration couldn't directly fund these Nazi groups. But what they could do is they could fund these groups by giving money to George Soros's NGO, non-governmental organization, is what civil society was. And that's what the Obama administration was doing. They were funding the Nazis through the CIA under the table, and then also through civil society was funding these Nazis as they carried out these missions to go into these regions and to bring these regions under the submission of the new government. The People's Front. The People's Front was the interim government that took control after the coup d'etat. Arseniy Yatsenyuk says right here, People's Front, also translated into National Front or Popular Front, is a nationalist and conservative political party in Ukraine founded by Arseniy Yatsenyuk. Arseniy Yatsenyuk is who Victoria Nuland and the leaked phone call is saying that this is who I think should be the leader. This is who we want to be in the leadership, and Arseniy Yatsenyuk becomes the interim prime minister. Oleksandr Tochnov becomes the president. So if you go back to this piece that I showed you guys, when we talked about Arseniy Yatsenyuk, this comes from The Guardian. And then you go down to this last paragraph. I'm going to read it for you because you probably can't see it, but it's talking about Arseniy Yatsenyuk, who is Jewish. Arseniy Yatsenyuk is Jewish. But this last paragraph says, He has played down his Jewish Ukrainian origins, possibly because of the prevalence of anti-Semitism in his party's Western Ukraine heartland. And the party that they're talking about here is this party, the party that was created by Arseniy Yatsenyuk and Oleksandr Tochnov, the People's Front. Okay, so this is who takes control after the coup: Nazis. And then again, you had other Nazi groups that were on the ground that were reinforcing the will of the Nazi government in Kiev. You had C-14. C-14 was a branch of Svoboda. Svoboda, let me read it here for you. The All-Ukrainian Union Freedom, commonly known as Svoboda, is a ultra-nationalist. So it's funny because it says the People's Front is a nationalist group, but Svoboda is an ultra-nationalist. They're all Nazis, people. They're all Nazis. Svoboda is an ultra-nationalist political party in Ukraine. It is led by Oli Tanibok. And then Oli Tanibok is also who Victoria Nuland is talking about in the phone call, where she says Tanibok should not go into the new government. Yaksenyuk should be the new prime minister, and Yaksenyuk becomes the new prime minister. But she says Tanibok, he should be on the outside. This is Tanibok giving the Nazi salute here, that Tanibok should be on the outside helping Arseniy Yatsenyuk. This is a picture of Tanibok with Arseniy Yatsenyuk. Here's John McCain when he and Chris Murphy came here, and he's standing with Tanibok on the stage telling the protesters that we supported their revolution. Most Americans didn't even know anything about this revolution. We didn't support this revolution. Obama brings Arseniy Yatsenyuk to the White House. We are supporting this thing all the way with Nazis. All right, so I want you to listen to this clip. This is a 60 Minutes interview that they do with George Soros. Like, I think it's in the 80s. This interview is super old, but tells you a little bit about George Soros's history of working with Nazis. His history of working with Nazis didn't just start in Ukraine in the 1990s.
At the center of George Soros, there's an inherent contradiction.
Which is,
on one hand, you're the capitalist who does not care about the social consequences of his act. And on the other hand, you are a philanthropist who cares only about social consequences. How do you resolve the two?
Recognizing that as a competitor, I've got to compete to win. As a human being, I am concerned about the society in which I live.
Which George Soros am I talking to now? The amoral George Soros or the moral George Soros?
It's one person. It's one person who at one time engages in amoral activities and at the rest of the time tries to be moral.
Wow, he says, listen to what he says.
Engages in amoral activities.
The moral George Soros.
It's one person who at one time engages in amoral activities and at the rest of the time tries to be moral.
To understand the complexities and contradictions in his personality, you have to go back to the very beginning, to Budapest, where George Soros was born 68 years ago, to parents who were wealthy, well-educated, and Jewish.
When the Nazis occupied Budapest in 1944, George Soros' father was a successful lawyer. He lived on an island in the Danube and liked to commute to work in a rowboat. But knowing there were problems ahead for the Jews, he decided to split his family up. He bought them forged papers, and he bribed a government official to take 14-year-old George Soros in and swear that he was his Christian godson. But survival carried a heavy price tag. While hundreds of thousands of Hungarian Jews were being shipped off to the death camps, George Soros accompanied his phony godfather on his appointed rounds, confiscating property from the Jews.
Wow.
These are pictures from 1944 of what happened to George Soros' friends and neighbors.
You're a Hungarian Jew who escaped the Holocaust by posing as a Christian.
Right.
And you watched lots of people get shipped off to the death camps.
Right. I was 14 years old, and I would say that that's when my character was made.
In what way?
Wow.
That one should think ahead, one should understand and anticipate events, and one is threatened. It was a tremendous threat of evil. I mean, it was a very personal experience of evil.
My understanding is that you went out with this protector of yours who swore that you were his adopted godson.
Yes,
Christian.
Yes.
Went out, in fact, and helped in the confiscation of property from the Jews.
That's right. Yes.
I mean, that sounds like an experience that would send lots of people to the psychiatric couch for many, many years. Was it difficult?
I'm amoral.
Not at all.
No,
not
I'm amoral.
Maybe as a child, you don't see the connection.
You were 14.
But it was, it created no problem at all.
No problem watching the Nazis take his Jewish family and friends off to the concentration camp. No problem going with his protectorate, who was paid by his father to swear that he was a Christian and was going around confiscating property from these Jewish friends and family as they were going off to the concentration camp. No problem. He says no problem.
No problem.
No problem.
No feeling of guilt.
No problem. No.
For example, that I'm Jewish, and here I am watching these people go, I could just as easily be there. I should be there. None of that.
Well, of course, I could be on the other side, or I could be the one from whom the thing is being taken away. But there was no sense that I shouldn't be there.
So George Soros, what I'm trying to tell you is that George Soros has no problem working with Nazis. That when he started working with these Nazis in Ukraine, that this was something that had to be done. It was business for him, and it still is business. As I showed you that he has a $1 billion investment in Ukraine, succeeding in this war, and I'm sure other people are invested as well. But the ADL says that if you question George Soros and what he's doing in Ukraine or what he's doing here in the United States, or you talk about George Soros meddling in people's politics, in their social politics, and if you're one of those people, then that's anti-Semitism. You're an anti-Semite. You're an anti-Semite because you have conspiracy theories about George Soros. But there aren't conspiracy theories. George Soros admittedly worked with Nazis as a child, and he worked with these Nazis to support these Nazis in Ukraine starting in 1990, is what he says. 1990.
He began those efforts. There were many years, I think, when it seemed it was all useless. Does it say something to you, teach you something about open society, civil society building?
Well, yes, because basically, in many ways, I set up the foundation in Ukraine in 1990. Which was 2 years before the independence of Ukraine. That was part, it was an offshoot of the foundation in Russia. You know, I set up a cultural initiative foundation in the Soviet Union in 1987, and then we built this branch in Ukraine in 1990.
So he had the organization on the ground. The Obama administration couldn't directly fund the Nazi government because they were being blocked by Congress, but the Obama administration could fund his NGO, which they did, and the CIA, using black ops and supporting the Nazis under the table, just like they did with Iran-Contra in the 1980s, sending arms to Nicaragua. They're doing the same thing in Ukraine. This was the largest Nazi group on the ground that was going around and was intimidating the Russian-speaking people, fighting with the Russian-speaking people in the areas of Odessa, Kherson, Mariupol, all these areas. These right sector Nazis were going around, and they were being supported by George Soros, and they were going around to force the Russian speaking people to accept the new Nazi government and the coup d'etat that had taken place in Kiev. The right sector, the coalition became the political party on the 22nd of March 2014, which at the time it claimed to have roughly 10,000 members, 10,000 members of right sector. The founding groups included Trident, okay? So who's this Trident group? So the Trident logo, you'll see, you've seen this. This is comes from Trident or Trizub, is a Ukrainian paramilitary organization founded in 1993. So just 3 years after George Soros sets up his civil society foundation there in Ukraine. Trident is founded, and it's founded by the Congress of Ukrainian Nationalists. You see this flag with the red on top and the black. This is the right sector flag that they adopted as well, the red and black flag. Its full name is Stefan Bandera, and this was the guy, the Nazi that I told you about, that the Viktor Yushchenko gave him hero status, a national hero status, and then Viktor Yanukovych, he rescinded the hero status of Bandera. Many of the Nazis, they revere Bandera, and that turned them against Yanukovych. So the right sector came from this group, this Trizub group, Trident. And the right sector had 10,000 members in 2014 that were going around the country of Ukraine, brutalizing Russian-speaking people. And in the Donetsk region, it was more of the Azov battalion. The Azov battalion was founded in May 2014, and they were the ones that were carrying out most of the operations in the Far East, in the Donbas region. But right sector was coming down here. I told you that right sector had blocked the roads from anything going into Crimea. They had dammed, the new government had dammed the water from coming down into Crimea, so they didn't have any fresh water. Again, just being very, very hostile towards them. And they were pushing the people, intentionally pushing these people into the arms of Putin. They were, I'm going to show you here in a moment, it's like they were trying to force Putin to act. They were trying to force him into invading Ukraine. This is a clip from the Ukraine on Fire movie about the right sector. Take a listen.
In the middle of the 1980s, perestroika meant restructuring towards liberalization and democratization. It certainly had a positive impact on the international situation.
Astonishing news from East Germany, where the East German authorities have said, in essence, that the Berlin Wall doesn't mean anything anymore.
This is 1989.
But inside the USSR, the weakening of Kremlin control had different consequences. In Ukraine, a nationalistic political organization, Narodny Rukh, or People's Movement, emerged in 1989 due to this new openness. They advocated for independence of Ukraine from the USSR and became an incubator for leaders of Ukrainian neo-Nazism. In 1991, one of them, Oleg Tyagnibok, founded Svoboda, an openly radical nationalist party preaching the good old principles of Bandera.
Вони готувалися і боролися з москалями, боролися з німцями, боролися з жидвою і з іншою нечистю, яка хотіла забрати в нас нашу українську державу.
Purge Ukraine from the Jews and Russians, Ukraine for Ukrainians, and so on. His statements got him fifth place in the Simon Wiesenthal Center Top 10 Anti-Semitic World Leader Rankings of 2012. But also, sadly, attracted numerous followers. Dmitry Yarosh founded another extreme right organization, Trizub, or Trident, in 1994. In April 2013, Yarosh became an assistant to a member of parliament from the opposition party UDAR. Later that same year, he would become the leader of the most radical Ukrainian Nazi group, the Right Sector. Andriy Paruby would soon appear leading a whole army of ultra-nationalist warriors.
This is Azov.
And the torch marches would once again light up the streets of Ukrainian cities.
All right, so they were working with Nazis the entire way. They knew that they were working with Nazis, the Obama administration, and the Nazis and their violence. This fire march actually is happening down in Odessa. So there are a lot of Nazis down there. And as I was explaining to you in the last podcast, the violence that happened in Odessa and that happened in Mariupol is what really turned the people in the Donbas region against the new transitional government that was in Kiev, the Nazi government, and they had their referendum for independence. And then after they have their referendum for independence, the interim president, Oleksandr, this guy, and he's the interim president. Nobody voted for this guy. They tell you that Ukraine, we got to stand up for democracy. Nobody voted for this guy. They staged a coup and this guy becomes the president. And he's the leader of a Nazi party called the People's Front. So after the people of Donbas, they turn against the government and they have a referendum. They want to be annexed by Russia, the way Crimea was. Russia refuses to annex them because Russia's attempting to negotiate a peaceful settlement, because Russia's still got to do business with the rest of Europe and sell gas to them. So he doesn't want to turn Europe, the European Union, against him, because he's a business partner of them. He's selling gas to them. So no, even though he had annexed Crimea, he refuses to annex Donbas, but he tells them that he's going to protect them. And the CIA, John Brennan, and the Obama administration, they force war. The Oleksandr Torchnov declares the people, when they vote for their independence, he declares them terrorists. And being led by John Brennan and the CIA, then he sends the Nazi armies, the Azov Battalion, and others to go and fight against their fellow countrymen, or former fellow countrymen after they declare their independence, to go and fight in the Donbas. Now, there's one, where's that one video that I want to show you guys before I show you? Hold on. Where is it? Because I just want to say something, man. When you radicalize children, you are a special type of evil. I think about this when I think about when you look at old pictures of the Ku Klux Klan and you see children, toddlers walking around in Klan robes and hoods. You're like, somebody set at a sewing machine and sewed a Klan robe for a child. It's like, wow. Or even you look at what goes on in Gaza, how some, they teach their children to hate the Jews. Like, I can show you video clips of schools in Gaza where they're teaching these children to hate, and these children grow up to be adults who hate. That's why this war, you know, there's never going to be an end to it, because when you teach children to hate, it's kind of on another level, the type of people who teach children to hate. And that's what's going on here in this video that I'm getting ready to show you. This is a video of a BBC reporter in the Donbas region in 2014 and 2015 when this war is going on. And she comes into their home. She's breaking bread with them. She has some tea. And they're just talking about this conflict from their point of view. And I want you to see this because it's very interesting. And then I'm going to show you how the CIA went to attack these people, these very people, and called them terrorists. Is what Oleksandr Turchynov called them. These are the terrorists that Oleksandr Turchynov is talking about.
We've just been invited to Victoria's house for some tea. And this is a family of farmers, so Victoria and Gennady, and they're farmers here.
Мы не за того, что мы там за Россию или там мы хотим за отделение. Вопрос в том, чтобы люди жили.
Listen to what she says.
Пусть это будет правительство, оно будет нормальное.
Hold on, I want you. I'm going to read this for you, because going back to what I was telling you in the last podcast, that most of the people in the Donbas didn't want to separate from Ukraine. They did not want to join Russia until the violence from the Nazis, until they started witnessing the violence in Odessa and in Mariupol, and that turned the people against the government. And that's what this woman says here. She says, we didn't. She says, it's not that we are for Russia or for separation. We weren't for Russia or for separation.
Не за того, что мы там за Россию или там мы хотим за отделение. Вопрос в том, чтобы люди жили при любом правительстве. Пусть это будет правительство, оно будет нормально.
The issue is about people being able to live normally under any government. That the problem is not that even the coup d'etat. The problem was that these people were dehumanizing us. These Nazis, they resent us, and they wanted to dehumanize us because they hate us just because we're rushing. That's what was going on here. And they were pushing these people into the arms of Russia. They didn't want to separate. They didn't want to be part of Russia, but the Nazis were pushing them into the arms of Russia. It says right here, and we want our opinions to be heard. No one in Kiev listens to us.
I asked again, do you want to be part of Russia or do you want to be part of Ukraine? And again, I says it's a wrong question. We just want order.
Надо сначала навести порядок. А, ну, если я фермер, я покупаю дистопливо 15-30, которое стоило...
But you gotta remember, when these people watched what went on in Kiev in 2004, the Orange Revolution. And then they watched Viktor Yushchenko come to power after the Orange Revolution, and then he'd be such a terrible president that they wanted him gone. So they bring in Viktor Yanukovych. Viktor Yanukovych is corrupt and not great. So he's gone. So going back to 2004, it's 2014 now. So for 10 years, they've witnessed nothing but disorder in Kiev. And that's what they're saying, that it's the wrong question. We don't want to be part of Russia. We just want order, is what they're saying. That it's not that we want to be part of Russia.
Если я фермер, я покупаю дистопливо 15-30, которое стоило 8 гривен. Оно в два раза поднялось, это на 100% все подорожало. Пришла вот эта новая власть. Она ж просто не владеет ситуацией. Вот что обидно.
Спасибо. Vika's mother and brother have just arrived.
Okay, so the mother and the brother arrive and they get in on the conversation. Okay, these are the terrorists. These people are terrorists, according to Oleksandr Turchynov and the CIA.
Zina, Vika's mom, she actually receives, she has a Russian passport. She lives on this side, but has a Russian passport, gets her pension there. And she says that her pension is four times bigger than the one she would have in Ukraine. But she says, don't advertise that too much because they're going to call me a separatist. And that's the last thing I need. I'm almost 70. No. Oleg wants to show me some videos that he says are making him and people here really, really angry. This is, he says, what we are seeing on Russian TV. And this family is really interesting because unlike most people that we talk to at demonstrations, pro-Russian demonstrations in Donetsk and Lugansk, they watch Ukrainian television as well. As Russian TV, and they say that they're making a very conscious choice, and here's to be with Russia, and here's why.
Вот это не сепаратизм.
Это школа, да?
Это школа киевская. Олег, это дети.
Нормально разговаривай. Олег.
Тише.
They're shouting, hang the Russians, hang the Russians. So he says, and now, and you're telling me we're the separatists, we're the bad guys?
Hang the Russians is what they're teaching their kids at this school. And look at this mob of children chanting in Western Ukraine, hang the Russians, hang the Russians.
They're shouting, hang the Russians, hang the Russians. So he says, and now, and you're telling me we're the separatists, we're the bad guys?
We're the terrorists. Who are the terrorists? The terrorists that, the people that block fresh water from going to elderly people in Crimea, the people that teach their kids to chant, hang the Russians, hang the Russians. Who are the terrorists, Oli Alexander? Who are the terrorists? Who are the terrorists, people? I played the clip of Mitt Romney saying that we support the freedom fighters. I did the whole podcast about the freedom fighters. Who are the freedom fighters, people? Who are the freedom fighters? The people who just want order, who just want to live with respect, or the people who block fresh water from going into elderly people in Crimea, the people who stage a coup, who try to outlaw the Russian language, who teach their children to chant, hang the Russians, hang the Russians.
Hang the Russians, hang the Russians. So he says, and now, and you're telling me we're the separatists, we're the bad guys?
So Oli Alexander says that these people sitting around their table drinking tea, just farmers in the eastern part of Ukraine, he said these people are terrorists because they wanted just, you know, a bit of human dignity. And they didn't accept the coup d'etat. And it wasn't even about the coup d'etat. Again, they didn't accept the violence that the right sector and these Nazis were perpetrating on their fellow Russian-speaking neighbors in Odessa and Mariupol and other. They forced these people into the hands of Russia. Take a listen to this clip.
Were you in Kiev recently?
I was in Kiev a couple weeks ago, yes.
Mm-hmm. Could you tell us what your mission was?
I was out there to interact with our Ukrainian partners and friends.
Ukraine's acting president has announced the start of an anti-terrorist operation in the east.
I want you to notice the date here. This is April 15th when the armies are already moving into the Donbas region. The Donbas doesn't have their elections for another 3 weeks. On May 11th is when they actually have their elections. So what I'm showing you is that Turchinov and the CIA and these Nazis started acting very hostile to them, aggressively, militarily, before they even had the referendum to separate in Donbas.
Ukraine's acting president has announced the start of an anti-terrorist operation in the east of the country.
Terrorists, listen. They're calling them terrorists. What terrorists? Who are you calling terrorists?
Today was the day Kiev sent in troops to try to wrest back control of the east.
Я встречался с теми людьми, которые стоят на улице. О чем люди говорят? Люди хотят два государственных языка. Люди хотят федерализации.
Ушки, блядь, ебануться, блядь, нам.
Сегодня призывают отправить армию. Сегодня призывают зачистить эти территории.
Сегодня называют... Look at this, this part right here.
Сегодня...
Today there is a call to send the army there. So we're called to send the army there, talking about Donbass. Today there is a call to cleanse these terrorists. Cleanse. He uses the words cleanse. What is he talking about? Cleanse. You're talking about ethnic cleansing, people. They want the Russian people to come under heel, or they want them gone. They want them to get out of Ukraine is what they wanted them to do. This is called ethnic cleansing. This is what he's talking about. Today there is a call to cleanse these terrorists. Which terrorists is he talking about? He's talking about these people in Donbass, this farmer, these people sitting around a table watching a video of the real terrorists.
They're shouting, hang the Russians, hang the Russians.
They're watching the real terrorists say, hang the Russians, hang the Russians. There's a call to cleanse these terrorists.
Сегодня призывают зачистить эти территории. Сегодня называют своих граждан террористами. Для чего? Я действительно считаю, что у нас есть возможность сохранить страну. Но для этого нужно остановить эскалацию насилия, прекратить военные операции, выступить в переговорах.
Look at that. It's a jet. They use jets to bomb the people, the terrorists, these people. They bombed them.
Офицер сказал, мы спрыгнули к машине, стали оружием. Все, он выполняли, когда куда приехал.
Ребята, все, сейчас начинаем. I'm gonna finish up this. I'm gonna play a little bit of the interview that Tucker Carlson did with Vladimir Putin a few weeks ago. Vladimir Putin tried to negotiate. He tried to, but before he took his armies into Ukraine. I showed you last week. He entered into the Minsk protocols to try to come to a peaceful settlement before it was necessary for him to invade. They couldn't come to a peaceful settlement. And then when Joe Biden comes in, you know, what better time to act than when you have the weakest president in the last 50 years become the president of the United States. That was obviously the time for him to act, and he was pushed to it. And that's why he invaded, is because he was forced to invade. The United States government, the CIA, and the Nazis in Ukraine were pushing him and forcing him to act in every sense of the way. And even I showed you last week how Angela Merkel, even though she was buying gas from Russia, she admitted that the Minsk protocols, the Minsk accords there in Belarus, were just a ruse to allow Ukraine to build up their armed forces, to build up their military in preparation for an invasion. I'm not going to be able to get into the meat of what I wanted to get into and what I really think this is about. So we'll pick that up on Friday. Let's just listen to a little bit of Putin here before we get out of here today.
Technically, they did everything right. They achieved their goal of changing the government. However, from a political standpoint, it was a colossal mistake. Surely, it was political leadership's miscalculation. They should have seen what it would evolve into. So, in 2008, the doors of NATO were opened for Ukraine. In 2014, there was a coup. They started persecuting those who did not accept the coup, and it was indeed a coup. They created a threat to Crimea, which we had to take under our protection. They launched a war in Donbass in 2014 with the use of aircraft and artillery against civilians.
You just saw it. You just saw the aircraft. You just saw the aircraft that they used on civilians. That's what he's talking about. Everything Putin says here is truth.
And artillery against civilians. This is when it all started. There is a video of aircraft attacking Donetsk from above. They launched a large-scale military operation, then another one. When they failed, they started to prepare the next one. All this against the background of military development of this territory and opening of NATO's doors. How could we not express concern over what was happening? From our side, this would have been a culpable negligence. That's what it would have been. It's just that the U.S. political leadership pushed us to the line
they
we
pushed.
Could not cross.
They pushed.
Doing so could have ruined Russia itself.
They pushed. He says the U.S. leadership, the Obama administration, they pushed. They continued to push us, to push us, to push us, to push us. They wanted the war. And there's a reason why they wanted the war. That's what we'll talk about in the next podcast. I'm going to explain to you exactly why they kept pushing Russia, why they wanted this war, and what this is all about. I'll see you guys on Friday, and I hope you have a great week. Thank you so much for listening.